So we're up to section C. No,
DNF.
ENF. Yesterday, we were reading about the urge to speak. And today we'll read about the agitations of the mind, tongue, belly, and genitals, and the conclusion. So, first on page 9, there's a definition of the two types of agitations of the mind. And then after discussing the mind's the disturbance caused by the manasavegam, then the tongue, belly, and genitals, those pushings will be described, and then the conclusion. So the mind is divided into two parts, or how the mind disturbs us. The first is called avirodha priti, unrestricted attachment. And these are divided, this unrestricted attachment is divided into just simply materialistic desires, karma, vadi desires, karma kanda desires, and jnanakandi desires. These are unrestricted attachments. They are improper attachments. There is a proper attachment for the mind, and there is an improper attachment for the mind. When the mind is improperly attached, the mind is our enemy, and it should be neglected, as the advice of any enemy should be neglected. Because if the enemy gives us advice, we can be certain that that advice is not good for us, because there is enmity in the enemy's heart. So similarly, the advice given by a mind that's attached to either impersonal philosophy, or the advice given by the mind that's attached to following the rules and regulations to attain sense enjoyment, going to the heavenly planets, attaining beautiful wife, great wealth, long life, dancing with heavenly damsels in the Nandana gardens, that's karmakanda. This is also bad advice by the mind, and it's unlimited, the mind, for its desires for these things. And the third one is the straight desires, avidhi, against the rules and regulations of the Shastra, simply for sense enjoyment, that the mind tends to want unrestricted sense enjoyment. And these desires, these pushings of the mind, are the pushings of a great enemy. And again, if we fall victim to these pushings, they will only give us trouble. On the other hand, when the mind has a different type of unrestricted attachment, an unrestricted attachment to Krishna, that is called raga. And this type of raga, or ashakti, attachment to Krishna, is the most glorious thing. Rupa Goswami prays as the mind of a young boy is naturally attracted to a young girl. Similarly, he prays that his mind may be attracted to Krishna in exactly the same way. Unrestricted, completely natural, without any force, with not only vidhi, no rules and regulations necessary, but just out of affection and natural attraction. This is actually Krishna consciousness. And this naturally happens to a devotee who is in the right association, and he hears a lot in that association about Krishna, because Krishna's qualities are so glorious. He is the best to a devotee who is in the right association, and he hears a lot in that association about Krishna, because Krishna's qualities are so glorious.
He is the best of friends. He deals with his friends in such a way that their affection for him just simply increases. And due to that affection and their love for him, they experience continuous, unending, and very sweet transcendental pleasure. Because Krishna is Rasaraj. He knows just how to play.
Just like an expert musician plays the strings of his sitar or guitar so expertly, so that there's chords, there's discords, there's one following the next one. So similarly, Krishna plays the different aspects of rasa. The happinesses, the chivalry, the angers, the ecstasies, the fear. He knows how to play all the emotions so that the affection, the permanent affection for the devotee, the sthaibhav, is enhanced, and therefore rasa is produced. The sweet taste, the sweet mellow of love for Krishna. Krishna is so expert at that. So, and he is the supreme controller, or he controls in the spiritual world through his yoga maya. So the whole spiritual world, let me put this, what's he doing? The whole spiritual world is organized just to increase the relish of rasa. And again, Krishna is the supreme expert at doing this. So that type of attachment, unrestricted attachment to Krishna, provoked by prolonged association with devotees, by association with devotees who have this attachment, or provoked by hearing about Krishna from these devotees in Srimad Bhagavatam, or provoked by deep prayerful chanting of the holy name, or provoked by association with the dust and trees and creepers of Vrindavan Dham, or that type of attachment provoked by association to worshipping the deity. This is wonderful, and this is to be sought after and prayed for and cried and lamented about, that we don't have it. And our devotional service should be practiced. Whatever service we do, it should practice with taste and with attachment, ruchi and ashakti. And that way, by Krishna's mercy, if he so desires, then he will benedict us with his mercy. After prolonged practice of vidhi, if we find that we have not attained Krishna's mercy, we should understand two things. That Krishna's mercy is sudolabha. What is the meaning of sudolabha?
Very rare.
Very rarely obtained. So there's two reasons why it's very rarely obtained. Does anyone know these two reasons?
Because Krishna becomes purchased by that love.
Right, so he just doesn't give it out cheaply, because he's going to be controlled by the devotee who possesses this bhav.
He doesn't award it unless we practice Krishna consciousness with rag, with attachment, with feeling. We should know this, and we should know what we have to do.
I don't know whether we're practicing with or without attachment.
If we don't know, we're not. Means spontaneity. Means that when we see the deity of Krishna and Srimati Radharani or Krishna Balaram or Gaunatai, our heart swells with feeling, and we want to offer prayers, we want to offer fruits, we want to offer flowers, we want to dress. When we chant the holy name, we chant with affection, with longing, with a sincere desire to serve. Like that, when emotion, our emotion, is we're not doing it just because the rules and regulations. We come to class because you have to come. But when there's an actual taste for these things and we want to do it, that means that some spontaneity, some very positive emotion is becoming to mix in with our following of the principles. The following of the principles must be there, but when it is done willingly, happily, spontaneously, this is a good sign. So what will happen? It will grow bigger, and then I add more fuel to satisfy it further. And then what happens? It grows bigger again. And adding more fuel, it grows bigger again and bigger again. So the more one tries to satisfy the burning desires of the mind, the bigger those desires become. And I think everyone has practical experience of this. It is not that a person who has $100 is satisfied, and it is not that a person who has $1,000 is satisfied, or a person who has $1,000,000, he is not satisfied, and the person who has $10 million or $100, he's also not satisfied. Because there's some... Is that right, Daru? This is the fact. So the result, because one is frustrated, because despite of all of his heart, so he's very frustrated. Just like if we're hungry and we're sick of the poor prasadam, and we go to the restaurant and we say, I don't care what, I'm going to eat these chips and French chips and cake until I'm satisfied. So you get... and your stomach becomes full and you're still, your heart is still not satisfied. More and more and more, and you're, until you get sick and frustrated and angry. Because there's just not satisfaction in the combination of the senses and the sense object, or the mind and the objects of the mind's desires. So that second is called Virodha Yukta Krodha, anger rising from frustration. So and Prabhupada explains that Jnanis, Karmis, and materialistic plan makers, and we can also add to that politicians, attract the attention of conditioned souls by promising what? To satisfy their senses. And then, because the senses are impossible to satisfy, when the anger comes from those who wish to satisfy their senses, they become frustrated and then angry at the politician, angry at the karmi, angry at the jnani. But actually they should just become angry at their foolishness, because then it might do them some good. So that's the result of trying to, of the pushings of the materialistic mind. Any questions or comments?
Yes, one day Prabhupada, I'm not sure if it was Prabhupada people or somebody else, said after when people in the country become so frustrated because of not being able to fulfill their material propensities, and they become so angry, so the state, the government, the politicians create a war so they can... they can fulfill their anger propensities. So a civil war, a war with another country. Yeah. And this is coming, you know, by periods when sensification goes very high. There's nothing more they can give them to satisfy them. So much frustration in the air.
They need an enemy. To unite everyone with the common enemy. This is how politics works. There's one story from the Mahabharata, how Krishna and Krishna and Balaram and Satyaki were traveling somewhere, and they stopped in one place to spend the night on the way of it that they traveled. So, because it was not a safe place, they decided to take turns to guard the camp at night. So first, Satyaki was going to take the first shift of 2 hours. So, Krishna Balaram, Satyaki, of course, was an incredibly powerful general. So Satyaki, while he was guarding the camp, one man approached him, a dark, heavy man with a demonic looking face, and he said, "I want," he was a Rakshasa, by the way, "I want to eat your friends. If you allow me to eat your friends who are sleeping, then I will spare you." Satyaki just laughed and said, "You foolish fellow. You're trying to create politics amongst Krishna, Balaram, and myself. I will kill you." "You will kill me? You don't know how powerful I am." Satyaki said, "Now I will find out. Let us fight." So Satyaki became very angry that this Rakshasa had the nerve to try to entice him to give up his friendship with Krishna and Balaram, to have the Rakshasa eat Krishna and Balaram to save his life, to save his own life, that he was insulted in that way. So he began to fight with great anger, and he began to punch him and beat him. But the Rakshasa, at night, the longer and stronger and more angry Satyaki fought with him, the Rakshasa became bigger and bigger and more powerful. And after 2 hours, Satyaki could not defeat the Rakshasa. And the Rakshasa seemed stronger, and Satyaki was getting very, very, very tired. And finally, after the 2 hours were up, the Rakshasa left. And Satyaki was exhausted. It was time to wake up Balaram, so he would take the next turn as guard. And Balaram, he decided, "I'm not going to tell anyone about this. The Rakshasa is gone. What's the need of telling anyone? I've driven him away. And anyway, I'm exhausted." So he woke Balaram up, and, "Balaram, it's your turn." And fell down and went to sleep. Balaram got up to take his turn as guard. And suddenly, the same Rakshasa came and said, "I want to eat your friends. And if you allow me to eat them, then I'll spare you. Otherwise, I will kill you, eat you, and then eat your friends." And Balaram, who was very fiery by nature and had reddish eyes, began to get very upset and said, "You dare challenge me in this way and say that I should give up the life of Krishna and Balaram, Krishna and Satyaki, who are more dear to me than my own life, just to save myself? You shall pay for this with your life." He picked up his club, and the Rakshasa said, "You don't know how powerful I am. You will see." Balaram immediately struck him, and the Rakshasa just laughed and grew bigger. Balaram became more angry, and they fought, and they fought for 2 hours. And Balaram could not defeat him, and the Rakshasa went away. And Balaram too was tired, and he said, "Krishna, wake up, it's your turn for the guard." And he fell asleep. Krishna, while standing guard, was approached by this gigantic Rakshasa, who had grown much in size due to the fighting with Balaram and Satyaki. And the Rakshasa approached Krishna with the same promise, that, "I will eat you, I will eat your friends, and spare you if you allow me to. You don't know how powerful I am. You better do this or you will be defeated, and I will eat you and your friends." And Krishna, when he heard this, just began to laugh. You'll defeat me? And then you'll eat Balaram and Sanyagi? Oh, this is ridiculous. Go away, go away. What? You dare to laugh at me in this way? Krishna just laughed. Yeah, I'm laughing at you. This is ridiculous. Just see, you're not even big. And it was true. But as Krishna started laughing, the Rakshasa started shrinking in size. So he said, what are you doing? Krishna just laughed. You can't do anything. You're ridiculous. You have no power. Get out of here. And the Rakshasa, but. And he kept on shrinking and shrinking in size as Krishna laughed at him. And just laughed at all the proposals he made. Until the Rakshasa was just this big. And when the Rakshasa was this big, Krishna took a corner of his dhoti and grabbed him and stuck him in the dhoti and quickly tied him up.
Put him in his pocket.
And then, after the 2 hours, Krishna, it was time for everyone to get up, so Satyaki woke up and Balaram woke up. And Satyaki said, well, I was so exhausted. Well, I was, oh my God, last night, this Rakshasa came and he was so powerful. And I couldn't defeat him no matter how I tried. It was frustrating. Balaram said, you didn't even warn me, but that same Rakshasa came to me. And I couldn't defeat him either. And he seemed to get more powerful the more hard I tried, and the more angry I got. And Krishna just started laughing. And he said, oh, a very powerful Rakshasa? Is this the one? And he untied his dhoti, and he took the Rakshasa out and just laughed. Oh, he is the one who is giving you so much trouble. And Balaram and Satyaki were amazed. And then Krishna explained, as you probably can guess, but that Rakshasa was anger. And the more you get angry, the bigger anger grows. And if when some provocation comes, and you don't get angry, but you just laugh it off, then the anger just diminishes and diminishes and diminishes. So anger is such a thing that it can't be controlled by more anger. It has to be controlled by less anger. When someone is angry at you, the tendency is to get more angry. But what is the result of that? His anger increases. But if it's just not taken seriously and laughed at, then that anger diminishes and becomes pipsqueak in size. And easy to deal with, and one's own anger doesn't cause any trouble either. So the body's demands can be divided into three categories: tongue, belly, and genitals. One may observe that these are in a straight line, and the bodily demands, now Prabhupada will discuss these one after another, the bodily demands begin with the tongue and its desire to eat. So therefore, Prabhupada quotes, sarira vidyajal jatendriya tohika jive pele visya sargare tare de madhurjiti loba moya sadomati take de sakochi nasamsare krishna varadaya moya karibala jiva jaya sva pasarana dilo bhai Sayanam Mita Kao, Radha Krishna Guna Gao, Premi Dako, Chaitanya Nakai. So the way to control the desire of the tongue to eat palatable foods is to eat only prasadam. And if one becomes controlled by his desires to eat tasty foods, then he is caught in this sarira avidya jal, this jal, this net which is of the material body. So Prabhupada on page 10, I don't know if you noticed this, but on page 10, from there are six kinds of rasas or tastes, there are three different kinds that are mentioned. Those in the mode of ignorance, meat, fish, crabs, eggs, and other things produced by semina and blood eaten in the form of dead bodies. You'll never guess what mode of material nature that is. It doesn't sound very attractive, does it? Others are attracted by eating vegetables, creepers, spinach, or milk products, but all for the tongue's demand. That's the mode of goodness. And such eating for sense gratification, including the use of an excessive quantity of spices like chili and tamarind, that's the mode of passion. These all three are actually to be given up by a Krishna conscious person. And then the intoxications of pan, haritaki, bito nut. Does not eat according to just the demands of the body, but one eats according to just eating Krishna prasadam, then gradually this demand of the tongue will become fully controlled. So that of the bodily demands, the demand of jiva vegam is the strongest. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is a very, very interesting and important point. He taught to avoid very palatable dishes, even while eating prasad. And why? Because they agitate the mind with the rich ingredients. They agitate the belly, genitals. They make one proud. And there's a quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita, that person who runs here and there seeking to gratify his palate and is always attached to the desires of his stomach and genitals is unable to attain Krishna. And the example of the opposite of this is Raghunath Das Goswami, who in Jagannath Puri went through three different successive stages of renunciation, even though he was the son of Haranya and Govardhan Majumdar, great, powerful, wealthy landlords. He became so austere. But it's not that we should artificially imitate the eating habits of Raghunath Das. First, Raghunath would take the money that was given to him by his parents and feed the Vaishnavas with that. Then he went to a stage higher of renunciation. He would beg for his money, for his prasadam, his food. And then, even higher than that, he depended so much on Krishna that he would just take rejected Jagannath prasadam that was stale and wash it and clean it up and eat that, and he maintained his body just in that way. One cannot imitate the renunciation of Raghunath Das. Why can't one imitate it? It's because Raghunath Das he was the foremost of Rupanugas, the foremost followers of Rupa Goswami. And he was a Manjari himself. I think it's Ratha Manjari or Rasa Manjari. I can't remember. Do you know? He's a Manjari who had descended to this world to perform his lila with Mahaprabhu. So one can't imitate such exalted Vaishnavas. Raghunath Das, when Krishnadas Kaviraj is praying always for the mercy of Rupa Raghunath at the end of every chapter, he's praying that he may also attain the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani by the mercy of Srila Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath is a follower of Rupa, and Rupa is a servant, Manjari servant of Lalita Vishaka, Srimati Radharani, and Sri Krishna. So one can't imitate it, but yet the point is there that if one makes, what is that saying that one, I think it comes from Gandhi, that one should live, if one should eat for the purpose of living, not live for the purpose of eating. Eat to live, not live to eat. So there's a tendency, even amongst devotees, that because we don't have so much other sense gratification, to the highest pleasure for us is eating. But one shouldn't think that way. One should honor prasadam, not, and satisfy one's senses by honoring prasadam and consciousness that of what the prasadam is. Of course, there's a very high standard. but we should make our pleasures, our desire for pleasure, we should make that desire just for the service of Krishna. And when we erase other desires from our heart and get our satisfaction from serving Krishna, then we will be very fortunate. And then Krishna will surely bestow His mercy upon us. Any questions so far?
So is it a powerful prasadam and prasadam maintaining body and soul?
Well, you mean, why don't you explain the question a little further?
Mm-hmm. The body who who expects the prasadam to be nicely cooked, clean, nutritious, you know, satisfying the six tastes in the Ayurveda, so to speak, and the prasadam that is not nicely cooked and not
clean. You just answered the question. First of all, the prasadam that's not cooked and not cleaned is probably not prasadam. In the sense of who is it? Prasadam means, it doesn't mean food. Prasadam means mercy that we offer to Krishna. Bhakti paritam asnami paritatmana. That if we offer to Krishna with devotion a leaf, a fruit, a flower, water, asnami, I will take it. Krishna says, I will take it, asnami. So if food is not cooked nicely, not palatably spiced, not clean, ingredients of the lowest quality, most likely that it is not cooked for Krishna, it is not offered with devotion to Krishna, and therefore Krishna has no obligation to take it. But then it is also said, fortunately in Vrindavan sometimes it is said that everything that is cooked is automatically offered. But this doesn't mean, the point that's being made here is that we should eat simple prasadam, not luxurious foodstuffs, and be cooking for the deity for the purpose of satisfying our own tongue.
But that should be prasadam palatable.
Of course, it should be, but that's the point, nice, that if it is prasadam, it will naturally be palatable. Because it's cooked for Krishna's pleasure or for the pleasure of the devotees. But on the other side, the point is that we shouldn't eat, it's not that we should look around for rotten foods, etc. The point is that we should eat simply. That's actually the point that's being made. And that's the point we should take from it. We should eat simply, be satisfied with simple food.
I heard that anybody from Bangladesh temple, this kind of temple, would come here and have the prasadam and everything, it would be in the palace. So it's a very relative point of view. We think it's not very nice. Well, I can.
No, but let's stick to the point of, instead of going into the local politics too deeply in management, let's just stick to the point and the philosophy. Sure. That, and I think it's clear what the philosophy is, that one should be satisfied with simple, palatable, nicely cooked prasadam. And not always aspire to satisfy the tongue through luxurious, rich, ghee-soaked, etc., rich with unlimited sugar and too much spices, maybe. Yeah, that's the point.
Himself preferred dodhi nimbu ala, that means sugar, lemon, and ginger, and some rice. This boy knows my taste. Yes.
Who did he tell? Govinda? Or who did he tell?
In Puri. Someone offered him very rich food. And the next day, his son perhaps offered him dohi nimbuala, yogurt, lemon, and ginger pieces. With just rice. And this boy knows my taste. What I like most. Simple food. And the only point that I don't understand.
Yeah.
Raghunath Das used to take those lumps of rice that was rejected by, even by the cows.
Yes.
Because it was so decomposed and odorous. Very good. He washed away the outer surface of this. The inner portion remained perhaps less decomposed or not decomposed.
Not decomposed, so say.
With a little salt, pinch of salt in it, he used to take that. And Sarup Damodar, his guru, spiritual master, which one omitted me counting such nectar he tasted every day. For so many,
share? Why don't you share?
I was so miserly and selfish and all that. There you go. And then another day, Mahaprabhu heard of this, secret, they are doing some secret. He came here, Mahaprabhu Kaushabe, Amayana Lokhani. What is it that you are all wasting?
Yeah.
And why don't you let me have something out of it? He took out a handful of thing and ate. And then when he was going to take a second handful, Sarva Goswami stopped him. Why? It's a nectar, no doubt. But why Mahaprabhu was stopped by Sarva Damodar from taking a second lump of this? It is nectar. And especially when it was offered to Jagannath before.
Why? But why did? Why were they doing that with Raghunath? Why were they taking the food like that?
In order to avoid letting this right.
No, why was Mahaprabhu and Surup Damodar taking Raghunath's prasadam
like that? To teach us something.
They were trying to encourage Raghunath Das that he was on the right path.
And also to teach us to read about
the and but what are they trying to teach us? About the renunciation of Raghunath Das and this principle. But it is not that every devotee was doing that, and Mahaprabhu's purpose and Surup Damodar's purpose was to encourage Raghunath in his renunciation. So that was the reason, and that encouragement was fulfilled. But Surup Damodar, it was hard for him to tolerate, after that encouragement, was basic encouragement was done, it was hard for him to tolerate seeing his Lord.
We should not offer him.
No. Just like, what was a similar pastime with Sudama Brahmana and Lakshmi Devi, when Krishna said, oh, you brought me some chip rice, and he wanted to take a little bit, and Lakshmi Devi, after one mouthful, stopped him. Krishna could eat a universe, and it would satisfy him. So chip rice, I mean, if it's with devotion, that's what he likes, but Lakshmi Devi, She it's hard for her to be satisfied seeing Krishna eat chipped rice. And Lalita Devi, Surup Damodar, how could he be satisfied by seeing Radha and Krishna? They want to make, because the point is that the luxurious food is not meant for us. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakta Uchate. When we give up this Ishwaraham Aham Bhogi Siddham Balavanapi, that I am the one who is the enjoyer, the perfect, powerful, happy one, and give everything to Krishna, giving up our own desires to enjoy, then we become happy. But it's not that Krishna, because we don't that we're not supposed to be enjoy and that we're supposed to be renounced, it's not that Krishna should be renounced and that Krishna shouldn't enjoy. He is the enjoyer. He is the Bhoktaram. We should offer him, but if that's all we have, Krishna will accept it. And another story is that story of Sanatan Goswami, when he was offering just chapati to Madan Mohan, who was in a tree, and the deity is even complaining, can I at least have some salt with the chapati? And Sanatan is so old and says, no, you cannot have some salt. Because today you'll ask for salt, and then if I give you salt tomorrow, you'll ask for sweets, and then I'll have to go, and then after that, you'll ask for different kinds of sweets, and then I'll be running all over and have no other business except finding you food. No, you please be satisfied with this chapati. And Krishna, alright. Peek. Okay, so we'll stop here and we'll continue tomorrow. So, by Dadu Prabhu's mercy, he brought out some lila.
You don't make me an offender.
Why, you?
I'm a very innocent person.
Innocent. You're more like ocean than drop. You're not innocent.
You know a hollow created by the hoof of a cow? That is the space I have.
But just like But it is just like samasritam ne palava plavam, that by the mercy of the devotees and Krishna, that ocean sinks to the size of a calf's footprint, so that size of a calf print also can return to being an ocean.
It contains the whole ocean.
Yes, it contains the whole ocean. So that kind of
calf footprint where you are, I know.
Let the calf footprint expand into bedroom, it shall be the
same. You can't defeat that. So at some point, it's just a matter of surrendering.
Okay, thank you.